From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now. In a few minutes, a lawmaker tells the story of Virginians moving out of state because of fears about the water supply. We'll hear what else happened at today's hearing.
But first, to a study out today that finds the number of exonerations for people wrongly convicted of a crime in the U.S. hit a record high last year, 87. That's 87 people who served time in prison for a crime they did not commit. The previous record was 83 back in 2009. The report comes from the National Registry of Exonerations. That's a joint program between the University of Michigan Law School and the Center on Wrongful Convictions at Northwestern University. And Samuel Gross is editor of the National Registry of Exonerations. He's with us from Ann Arbor. Welcome.
Good to be here.
Well, why 87, a record last year? Did you figure out what the reason was that there were so many exonerations?
Well, there are two answers. One thing it wasn't was DNA. The number of DNA exonerations, which a lot of people think is all the exonerations that occur. But that number has actually been slowly decreasing over the last 10 years. The number of non-DNA exonerations has doubled in the same period. So the question is, why all these new non-DNA exonerations? And I think the general answer is that everybody, the general public, but in particular all the participants in the criminal justice system, police, prosecutors, defense attorneys, judges, we've all become more aware of the danger of false convictions and more willing to invest the effort and time to re-examine cases in which innocent people might have been convicted and, if necessary, to reverse the cases and try to correct that.
And were these old cases or were these relatively recent cases?
On average, the convictions had been 12 years before the exoneration. So these were, for the most part, people who'd spend quite a bit of time in prison.
And a full 20% of them had actually pleaded guilty to the crime when, in fact, they weren't.
That's right. And this isn't surprising in one sense, because the vast majority of defendants who are convicted of felonies plead guilty instead of going to trial, almost always in return for plea bargains. The reason they do is obvious. If you are offered a plea bargain, the deal might be plead guilty and get 1 year in prison or 6 months in a county jail. On the same crime, if you reject the plea bargain and go to trial and you're then convicted, you might get 5 years in prison or 10 years or 25 years in prison. What this reflects is that we're getting more realistic and we're recognizing that in some cases, even an innocent person will take that sort of deal rather than risk the extreme danger of going to trial.
Well, and there's a great illustration of this in your report. It's the case of Nicole Harris. Tell us about her.
Well, Nicole Harris was convicted of a terrible crime, if it had in fact happened, of killing her own son. She was interrogated by police officers for a long period of time, and ultimately not only pleaded guilty but admitted to the crime, gave a false confession, which she later renounced and said that she just did it because she was so distraught and upset and so pressured by the police. She's now been released and is going to graduate school, which is very good to hear.
Is there something that law enforcement or the judicial system could be doing to prevent these kinds of things from happening?
There are proposals to deal with some particular aspects of the problems of false convictions. We talked about Nicole Harris. That's a case of someone who falsely confessed. A big problem with confessions, and there are false confessions. People do sometimes confess to crimes they didn't commit. But when they do, if there's no recording of the interrogation in which the confession took place, we don't know why the person might have admitted to this terrible crime which she didn't commit. So there is a movement which is taking root to require that police interrogations, especially in homicide cases, be video recorded so that later on we can see what happened and try to figure out whether this was a false confession and what it's worth. And there are reforms that are proposed to our system of getting eyewitness identifications that will reduce the problem of errors. But I don't think there's any single solution.
You know, I know the headline on your study is that there was a record number of people exonerated last year. I have to say, when I first saw it, I thought only 87? There are 2.5 million people in prison in this country.
That's right. This is a very small number. And what it reflects is the worst part of the story, which is that the great majority of people who are innocent or convicted are never exonerated. Their cases are never discovered. Consider two crimes of violence, robbery and rape. Both are crimes that are sometimes committed by strangers. And when they are, the criminals are convicted, if at all, primarily based on identification evidence from the victims. And in both cases, it's possible that the victims will make mistakes in identifications. You would expect those mistakes to be much more common in robberies than in rapes. First, there are about five times as many robberies by strangers as rapes by strangers. And second, the victims in rape cases generally see the criminal at close quarters for a significant period of time. And the victims in robberies sometimes only see the criminals for 10 or 15 seconds, but there are about five times as many rape exonerations as robbery exonerations. Why? Well, because of DNA.
Yeah.
The number of DNA exonerations that you see in the cases in which DNA is available gives you an idea of how many cases were missing. So the cases that we know about are heavily weighted towards the people who were convicted and sent to prison for life or received the death penalty, who got 20 or 30 years. And everybody else, for the most part, has no chance of ever proving their innocence.
Samuel Gross is a professor at the University of Michigan Law School. He's also editor of the National Registry of Exonerations, and we've got a link to his report at hereandnow.org. Professor Gross, thanks so much.
Pleasure to be here.